This just in, breaking news. Our top stories this week. EOS Network Ventures transfers 22 million EOS. What does it mean? We'll ask ENF founder and CEO Yves Larose. Also joining us today, Matthew Darwin, Chief Infrastructure Officer for EOS Nation. EOS Nation is here to talk to us about faster, cheaper, and better history data on EOS and more. Welcome, everyone, to the EOS Fireside Chat for June 14th, 2023. We've got a nice curated selection of topics for everyone today. Includes about 7 topics and 5 guest speakers. We're talking firehose and substreams technology for EOS and Antelope. We're talking, of course, EOS EVM, DeFi growth, multi-chain airdrip, neutral spaces swap, EVM name service, and more. Pomelo stats and pitch sessions will be mentioned. Of course, season 6 is in full swing. And then we've got Lenny talking to us about a partnership between Eden and Haifa. And I'm going to highlight a couple pieces of EOS in the crypto news. But before we get to our first guest today, just want to highlight that today is June 14th, which is the 5-year anniversary of the activation of the network. And so some people consider today the birthday. We, of course, celebrated last week the 5-year anniversary, which marked the first block that was produced on the network. All in all, it's been fun reminiscing about the last 5 years and highlighting some of the strengths and advantages that the EOS network has demonstrated over a longer period of time than most other blockchain networks can brag about. All right, so let's jump in to our first topic of the day. We teased it a bit last week when Dogman asked about firehose on EOS, and we're going to be going more into details this week. So what are we talking about? Firehose and substreams technology for Antelope and EOS, of course. As you may have seen in the thumbnail, we're talking about, and in the intro, faster, cheaper, and better blockchain data, history data for all of these blockchain devs that want to create great blockchain apps for all of us. So we have our special guest today, Matthew Darwin, like I said, Chief Infrastructure Officer for EOS Nation. For those of you who don't know, my name is Stefan. I'm one of the co-founders as well of EOS Nation. And today we also want to introduce a new brand of ours, the Pinax Network brand, which is the brand under which we are developing and promoting the firehose and substreams technology. So without further ado, Matthew Darwin, welcome back to the Fireside.
Hey, thanks, Steph. It's been a long time since I've been here. So happy to be here and talk all things firehose and substreams.
All right. Yeah, we're excited to have you back on. I know you've been very busy. And so I'm happy that you can share with the EOS community a lot of what you've been working on. So let's take it from the start. And perhaps you can give a quick overview of the current history solutions that are available on EOS right now.
Yeah, so on EOS today, there's a few different history solutions. So we've got Graymass has their Robo stack, which they use to service history requests. We've got Hyperion from the EOS Rio team. CC32D9 has created a bunch of different tools for various different applications. And from the EOS Nation team, we've got Diffuse. So Diffuse is a little bit heavy to run, operate, keep running, you know, keep it live. It uses lots of disk space. So that's a challenge. And hopefully with Firehose and Substreams, we will get rid of that challenge. But the thing about Diffuse that we want to keep is the fact that it's a very comprehensive history solution that tracks everything that happens on the blockchain, every state change, every transaction, everything that happens. Yeah, that's the part we want to keep.
Great, exactly. So just to give a bit more of context to everyone listening, I'll be sharing in the chat some of the slides of a presentation that we released today on the PinAxe Network YouTube. I'll share the link to that after the presentation. But while Matthew's speaking here, I'll be sharing some slides here in the chat for you guys to follow along with some visual aids. All right, so what? So thanks for that introduction about what the current situation is and with Diffuse. And maybe you can talk about how we got to Firehose from Diffuse.
Yeah, so Firehose is built really on the, you know, multiple years of history that came from the Diffuse team. So you may recognize these fine folks here. They started as ES Canada. ES Canada got rebranded to Diffuse. Diffuse got rebranded to Streaming Fast. But the same core team is there, and they're building Firehose today. And what's great is that they started in the EOS, you know, Antelope ecosystem, and they have all of that background that still continues today in everything that they're building, even though Firehose is a multi-cross-chain platform tool.
All right, so what exactly is Firehose?
So, good question. So it's a data model framework for all blockchains, as I mentioned. So it's not just about Antelope. It can run on a single server. It can run on a big cluster. Just like Diffuse, all the data from the blockchain is extracted into flat files. The flat files allow us to do multi-processing in parallel. So what that means, you know, in simple terms, is it goes fast. If you have more computers, it'll go fast. With typical blockchain applications, they're limited to the speed of one computer because, you know, a blockchain has to go in order. With this extracting all the data, now you can put it in a big, huge data center and process everything. And as important in blockchain, it's open source. So anybody can download it, run it, and work on it themselves.
Great, exactly. And our expertise here at EOS Nation and PinAxe Network is that we're going to be operating this software. As we've had years of experience doing that, we're in a unique position to already have experience with this new software. Also, because we've had a close working relationship with the Streaming Fast team, which was previously EOS Canada. So why does Web3 need Firehose?
Well, the thing with Web3 is you can imagine, you know, if we think about EOS as a blockchain, it's got a lot of data. If we go back and think about the EDOS days where we have tons of transactions, or maybe earlier when I Love BM was popular, you know, it's a lot of data. But EOS is just one blockchain. What about Wax, Telos, the rest of the Antelope chains? What about all the Ethereum chains? What about all the Tendermint chains? What about all Solana? What about Aptos and Sui? So, you know, the number of blockchains is just, it's not going down for sure, and is going up a lot. And the, you know, the amount of data that we need to store in any one of those blockchains keeps going up. So this is a world of huge amounts of data that need to be processed. And in the future, you know, applications are not, that you want to use as a user, are not limited to one blockchain, right? You're going to need to use multiple for various different things. So anyway, the world needs Firehose because the world has a huge amount of data stored in blockchain, and we need solutions that know how to process all of this stuff.
All right. And now, compared to the current solutions available on EOS right now, what advantages does Firehose and Substreams bring to the network?
Yeah, so what we want to do is, like, Diffuse is a big monolith. Like, you kind of run all of Diffuse or you don't run any of it. It's not quite true, but basically that's how it works. With the whole idea behind Firehose and Substreams, it's taking the core part of Diffuse that is processing all the blockchain data and removing all the optional bits. So, like, some people want a block explorer, but not everybody needs a block explorer. Some people want to store the history of all the transactions, other people don't. So Firehose at its core is just the core pieces that came from Diffuse, plus a good way in order for the application developer to build the parts that they want. So this gives the operators much more flexibility because now they don't have to operate the entire stack of huge diffuse. You just run the core part, and then developers can then build their applications using a custom data feed for whatever they're trying to build. Of course, operators could also host that data for a developer, but it's not required. So that's the idea, is giving much more flexibility in the stack of code that needs to be run in order to make, you know, scalable applications.
All right, I see we got some questions coming in from the chat. Love to see it, Luca. Please feel free to continue writing down the questions. We're going to go through the presentation first, and then we'll go back through the chat to answer some questions. And of course, you guys are always free to jump on stage and ask your questions that way as well. So another of the advantages here of Firehose is that it would be connecting Antelope to the wider Web3 community, basically bringing that same standard, the same standard that's used elsewhere to the Antelope communities, in order for these aggregators to be able to easily show EOS network-related statistics. So, Matthew, you've been talking Firehose. Sometimes you mention substreams. I know for me personally, it took me a while to kind of understand the difference between the two. So maybe you can talk a bit more about what substreams are specifically compared to the Firehose.
Yeah, so Firehose is a way to get like the entire block from the server. So I want block X, or really, I want all the blocks starting at X. And the way substreams works is it allows you to say which things you want. So rather than getting everything, because most developers, you know, do they need everything? Probably not. They just want the piece that they need. So the way substreams works is that they are composable. So if I'm a developer and I write some substreams code that knows how to, you know, for example, ESIO.token, it knows how to handle that. Well, another developer can come along and say, well, I'm going to build something that uses the data from ESIO token, but I don't have to understand how ESIO token works. So substreams are composable. One developer can build on top of what another developer built. They're also parameterizable. So this means that if a developer provides like a little web form on their web page that says, you know, enter your account name, then maybe it could just show all the transactions for your account. But the substream is exactly the same as the one that shows your account and my account. It's the same thing. We're just passing the name of the account to the substream to ask it to run it. Transformable. So the idea behind diffuse is that, you know, it has a GraphQL interface or it has a REST interface, but, you know, it's kind of fixed. Well, you get what you get. With the substreams, the developer can take the data that's coming from the server and put it wherever they want. I want it to be a bot that writes me messages in Telegram. Great, you can do that. Or you could put it on a web page and show a, you know, stock ticker kind of view. Or you could put it in a database. Or you could process it in a different way that's a message queue of some sort. So the whole idea is we're thinking about Web3, not just in building like web apps, but what are all the different things that go on behind the scenes that the developer might want to use or a user might want to interact with. And then the last thing is, I mentioned before, it's parallelizable. So the blocks are processed in chunks. And if you have 1,000 CPUs and you need to process the whole history of the entire EOS blockchain, well, guess what? We can use all 1,000 CPUs and just chop up the work.
Yeah, so that's where I was mentioning faster, right? So maybe you can talk a bit more about how fast. I'm sharing an image here that says 8 times faster. I think this was for the entire history of Ethereum. And I know also Messari has been using this technology to generate their reports. Maybe you can share a bit about that.
Yeah, so Messari is they generate a report for EOS every quarter talking about the EOS community. And they do this for a lot of blockchains. And yes, they're using Firehose and substreams to power their infrastructure. they're just getting started with it, but we'll definitely see more. But yeah, they managed to process the 7 years of Ethereum data in 20 minutes. Well, that's pretty impressive. Just a more recent example is a couple of weeks ago, the Uniswap team got a preview of Firehose and Substreams. And that used to take 2 to 3 months to process Uniswap to put it into the Graph ecosystem, in the Graph database. And the Streaming Fast team, using Substreams and a bulk import mechanism into the Graph, they did that in 20 hours. So from 2 months or two more than 2 months to, you know, less than a day. That's an amazing transformation in terms of how Substreams works. Obviously, you need a bunch of CPUs to be able to process all of this data. You know, it doesn't come cheap, but it actually works.
Very cool, very cool. All right, so what are some current examples of Substream-powered dApps?
So, well, other than just the Mazari example that we just talked about, who are, you know, generating dashboards and things, our team has built things like a Google Sheets. So this is, you know, maybe not your typical, you know, Web3 application, but, you know, the accountants among us, you know, need to understand all the transactions that happen on chain. Accountants like spreadsheets. Great. So why don't we just populate Google Sheets directly with Substreams? So our team has built a, you know, plugin that runs inside your Google Sheets, and it will pull data from Substreams. It's still a work in progress, but it's kind of cool. Another, you know, for example, if you're looking at Pomelo, the Pomelo team might want to use Substreams to have alerts about, you know, when the grant is approved or waiting to be approved or things like that. So you can use Substreams for that. There's an example of the Geo browser. It's a Web3 browser that's trying to display everything about what's happening in Web3. Obviously, that's going to be powered by Substreams as well. So there's lots of examples. This is really, really early days, and we expect a lot more applications to be built directly on Substreams.
There you go. And thank you, Daniel, for sharing these videos of our Substreams Unleashed series, which features some of the developers on our team. Some of them are interns building these fun little dApps that are powered by Substreams. So definitely visit our Pinax Network YouTube channel, subscribe, and then you can have fun exploring more Firehose and Substreams content there. All right, so that's kind of what's available right now. Of course, this technology is very new, so we're still in the process of just getting up and running and getting people aware about it and getting developers interested on using this technology to power their dApps. But what kind of dApps could be powered by this in the future?
Well, really, the sky's the limit. What can you imagine? Well, there's probably a Substream for that. So GameFi, obviously, we talk a lot about GameFi in the EOS ecosystem, digital identity, DAOs, for example. So, for example, you know, if we look at, say, Eden, they have a very interesting smart contract and how all of that runs, you know, in the browser. They could definitely use Substreams to power, you know, an Eden election, for example. Web3, social media, real estate, I don't know, whatever. Tons of ideas. You know, maybe a Substream will power the color changer, you know, on your shirt. I don't know.
Awesome. All right. Great. So we'll be sharing a link to the 27-minute presentation that Matthew did on this stuff. Today, we're doing kind of a condensed version of it, not going too deep into the tech side. But don't worry, there'll be plenty more tech-related content for everyone who's interested in that to be consumed later on in the coming days, weeks, and months. All right, so let's talk a bit about some technical stuff that might get the devs excited. So how does Substreams allow you to test and get feedback more rapidly than before?
Yeah, so one of the things, you know, I gave the example of, you know, Uniswap takes 20 hours. Great. So if a developer makes a, you know, they're trying to work through their code and figure out what they're developing, if they have to, you know, write something and then wait 20 hours and then, oh, it didn't work. Right. Then they change something and then they wait 20 hours. Okay, this is really, really not productive, right? So the Streaming Fast team built a Substream debugger tool. Basically, it's called the Substreams GUI, and it allows the developer to see the results of what happened in their query. They can change their Substream and rerun it in context. So quick iterative changes can be done as part of the development process. So the whole goal here is enabling developers to build stuff quickly, get applications out to market faster, and of course, at the end of the day, way more cool stuff.
All right, excellent. And finally here, our last point, let's bring it back to the EOS EVM, of course, one of the most trending topics in EOS lately. So how is Firehose and Substreams going to help EOS EVM?
So what we want to do is, well, so all of the EVM data, of course, is on the EOS blockchain. And the EOS blockchain will work in Firehose and Substreams. We have a beta version today. So if somebody wants to play with it, reach out to me, send me a direct message, and let's talk about how do we get you access to that. So all of your EVM data is all there in EOS. So feel free to try it out. The speed of EOS, you know, meets the robustness of Firehose, Substream. So you've got the bestest, fastest EVM on the planet, and you've got all the data. One of the things that we're looking at in the future is maybe having a EVM-specific Firehose that looks like all the other, EVM Firehoses. So the Antelope chain has a Firehose that, represents the data in an Antelope fashion. So EOS, Telos, Wax, UX would all look kind of the same. Similarly, there's a, Polygon, Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, they have a format of the data that's represented there. So we're looking at how do we represent the EOS EVM data to make it look like Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, Polygon, etc. So then a dApp that builds for those chains has the same experience if they move to EOS EVM. So that's coming. But at the moment, all the data is exactly there in the EOS blocks.
All right. Great stuff. So that's going to wrap it up for the presentation we had planned for everyone. I don't know how long we went. I think it was a bit longer than I anticipated.
I talk too much.
No, that's great. That's great. It's all good. At this point, if anyone wants to jump on stage, ask Matthew some questions. We still have him for a little bit, and I'm gonna scroll through the chat here in the meantime and see if there was any questions in there.
So there's an earlier question about how is this for a Diffuse developer, how is this different, right? So Diffuse, kind of as I alluded to, gives you a fixed set of APIs. So you can use the GraphQL endpoint. You can use the REST endpoints. There's some WebSocket endpoints. So, but it's fixed. It's whatever the EOS Nation team has provided or whatever the Diffuse team built. That's what you get. And so with Substreams, the idea is it doesn't really come with a predefined API other than the Substreams API itself. So if you want to build an application, with a nice RESTful API, well, that's something that you would control and you would build an API that's exactly what you need for your dApp. And the goal here is as part of the different syncs that are provided. So this is the different output formats where the Substreams data can be sent. One of them is a key value store. And that key value store, you can actually bundle the API that you want with your Substream. So when a Substream is deployed, it comes with an API. And then that API is customized directly for your application. So it's definitely a change for a Diffuse developer. if you're using, you know, the existing Firehose interface with Diffuse, it's going to be pretty much the same. But if you're using any of the other features of Diffuse, then there's going to be some changes. But what's nice with this is, you know, we'll be able to build some, in some cases, backwards compatible APIs using substreams that are look the same as what you get in Diffuse. However, we're not going to build a generic GraphQL interface. That's already actually provided by the graph in GraphNode. So you can actually use Antelope Firehose with GraphNode and get a GraphQL interface. So we're not going to build that because it already exists. Hopefully that answers the question.
All right, thank you, Luca, for that great question. And thank you, Matthew, for joining us today on the Fireside.
All right. Happy to be here. Call me back when you have more questions that you want to learn about history solutions and how we're processing it.
There you go. Awesome. We will do that. All right. Thanks, Matthew.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you learned a little something. If you're a developer, if you're a blockchain dev, hopefully this got you a bit excited about what's coming and the new tools that will be available for you to build cool dApps that I can then use. So that's going to be great. All right. Before, let's see, Eve has not joined us just yet. He will be joining as soon as he gets off a meeting. So we're going to wait a little bit to get to that topic. But while we wait, before we get to our next topic, just wanted to remind everyone to subscribe, like, and share wherever you're listening in, whether it's on Discord, YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook. Leave a comment, share with a friend. We love the engagement, and let's make sure these EOS Fireside Chats are spread as wide as possible so we get the word out about all of the awesome innovations that's going on in the network. Of course, we want to hear your thoughts, your questions, your topics. You're always welcome to jump on stage with me. You're always welcome to leave questions in the chat as well. I'll make sure to go through it and address most of them. And then finally, Pop Token giveaway. The bot is live. You can claim your Pop Token in the chat. The prizes for last month's raffle ticket were sent out last Fireside, live on the Fireside. The prizes for the 5-year EOS Moments anniversary giveaway have also been sent out. So if you joined us last week, you opened some of your EOS Moments NFT boxes and found some rare EOS Moments in there, you may have won some extra EOS. If you missed out, you're looking for more opportunities to earn EOS Moments block boxes, make sure to grab those Pop Tokens, blend them into a raffle ticket, and we'll be distributing more of these every month to people in the community who join the Fireside, whether it be this English version, the Chinese version that happens on Telegram. There's going to be a Spanish version one soon as well. We got EOS support hosting all sorts of shows throughout the week as well. So you can grab some Pop Tokens all over the place and join the monthly raffle. All right, we got some Pomelo Grant promotion going on in the chat as expected while Pomelo Season 6 is live. We'll be talking about Pomelo in just a little bit. But before that, let's talk EOS EVM. So the EOS Network Foundation published a nice article yesterday or just a few days ago, exploring the EOS EVM DeFi landscape, basically highlighting a lot of the dApps, wallets, bridges, and opportunities that are currently available on the EOS EVM. And so I've highlighted a couple of sections of this article that I'd like to read out to everyone right now. So since the launch On April 16th, the EOS EVM ecosystem has opened up new world of opportunities for those who wish to leverage the performance, the reliability, and the low fees on EOS from within the familiar EVM framework. As this next wave of social and financial capital enters the ecosystem, we're seeing a proliferation of developers looking to build their dApps on the EOS EVM. With new listing and resources being constantly added, it's a challenge to keep up with the latest development. So in this article, the ENF is providing an overview of notable projects and tools within the EOS EVM ecosystem to help the community members navigate the most performant EVM on the market. So real quickly, we got some wallets: CoinHub, Fox Wallet, Ledger, MetaMask, Rabi Wallet, and Token Pocket. A couple of these I was familiar with, a couple I was not. That's always fun to see. We got bridges, of course, the EOS EVM trustless bridge that is connecting EOS Native to the EOS EVM. There's also multi-chain, which is both a bridge and allows for cross-chain swaps, as well as Meson.fi and Rubik that do the same thing. We've got DeFi dApps, of course. There's NoahSwap, there's NutraSwap. Seems like they're two of the leading swaps on the EOS EVM right now. There's, of course, also Froggy.finance, built by Esteban, a regular in the EOS Fireside Chat, or at least he was a regular before launching this dApp. These days, I think he's pretty busy. I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks. There's also Aave.ai. And then we've got data aggregators, which is great to see EOS finally included in these crypto aggregators. DeFi Llama, Gecko Terminal, CoinMarketCap, DexScan are some examples of aggregators that are showcasing EOS EVM data. So are you interested in exploring the EOS EVM ecosystem? Check out this page. On it contains a bunch of other links to other information. And if you're interested in building on EOS, of course, there's lots of funding available. Pomelo Season 6 right now has an EOS EVM pool. There's grants available and also other opportunities that you can find out in this article. Recently, of course, the EOS EVM webinar was held. We had Nathan James, head of developer relations for ENF, as well as Matthias Romeo, the software engineer, and Adam Buchtila, CPO of Zysan, joining forces and bringing us an excellent EOS EVM webinar. Hey, Esteban in the chat, always here every week. What's up? Nice to see you there, Esteban. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. I'm curious if you guys have had the time to listen to this EOS EVM webinar. So let's see some ones in the chat if you've listened to it. And let's see some twos in the chat if you plan on listening to it but haven't had the time yet. I'm going to go ahead and drop my number two. Even though I'm not going to be building anything on the EOS EVM, I am just curious to learn more and better understand this ecosystem. Got some ones coming in here from Drew Joy, Optic, Redrum. Got a couple twos from Yana and Dave. Rhett says he was there. Of course, Rhett part of Zysan as well. Esteban got in there. Jonathan from the Pinax team got in there. Awesome. Love to see it, guys. And quick note, actually, which is highlighted here, which I hadn't thought of in a little bit. The EOSnetwork.com site actually has a page that features a lot of projects in the EOS ecosystem. So whether you're building on EOS EVM or EOS Native, make sure you submit your project details and to be considered for inclusion in the EOS ecosystem page. So here's the I sent the link to the page where you can submit your application information. Now, if you're considering building on EOS EVM, make sure to apply for up to $50,000 in funding. So the article states that they invite projects interested in developing on the EOS EVM to seize this opportunity, make a lasting impact. There's a form to fill out, and then you can explore the potential to receive up to $50,000 in incentives, along with marketing and dev support for qualifying projects. Of course, terms and conditions apply as always. So good stuff. Love to see so much activity development on the EOS EVM side of things. What else do we have going on in EOS EVM world? That's right, the multi-chain EOS airdrip campaign. So you've heard of airdrops before, I'm sure, but have you heard of an airdrip? So what an airdrip, so what this EOS airdrip campaign does is that, well, okay, so in order, so let me just read out the tweet here. It's well written. In order to improve the user experience of the EOS EVM, the first few transactions of users entering the ecosystem with the multi-chain bridge will receive complimentary gas. The goal is to make it easy for new users that may not yet hold EOS to begin transacting immediately. So the thread goes on to say, why is this important? Well, currently, if a new user bridges an asset, let's say USDT, onto the EOS EVM to take part in DeFi protocols, they must also transfer a bit of EOS for their gas. So this causes unnecessary friction and prevents the end user from transacting right away. With this program in place, users are provided with enough gas to swap some of their assets into EOS directly on the EOS EVM. This enables them to begin leveraging the EOS EVM quicker and without the need to go through any unfamiliar process. The feature only applies to accounts that hold some multi-chain assets and have a zero EOS balance. Eligible accounts will receive gas in around 5 to 10 minutes after transacting. So very cool airdrip campaign promotion. It's going to allow people to get into the EOS EVM ecosystem with less friction, which is always good. I don't know if there's anyone from the ENF currently here that could speak a bit about this. Hey, so of course, someone's offering free resources in blockchain. How is this not just going to get spam and pillared?
I think I'm probably not the best to speak too deeply to that, but I think it has to do with the amount of gas that is being distributed to them. So the real purpose of this gas, that should be just enough so that if someone's coming on to the EVM with some multi-chain assets, they don't have gas yet, so they don't hold EOS yet. They might be coming from another ecosystem. They'll get enough gas to swap some of their assets for more EOS, but not much more than that. And because of some of those prerequisites of having to hold multi-chain assets, not actually already have an EOS balance, it should mitigate some of it. I assume there's some math in there to make it, math trademark, to make it, trickier to cyber attack. I'm not sure if there's anyone else here who can speak deeper there on that topic, but that's about all I got.
No, that makes sense for sure. Just enough for one transaction, not enough to cash out any of those actually free resources.
I think part of it is that if someone was cashing out the resources, they'd be spending the gas that they had gotten to cash out those resources. So be a net loss.
Okay, cool. Very, very, very good stuff. Love to see these kinds of programs promoting more EOS EVM action. Next up, we also have, talking EOS EVM, NeutralSwap AMA is happening tomorrow, 1 p.m. UTC. So Brandon Lovejoy of the ENF is hosting this show. We're going to have Benny Maru, co-founder of NeutralSwap, on the show to answer some questions. And I'm actually also going to be on there co-hosting with Brandon. I'm probably going to be asking some of the harder hitting questions, diving deep into their plans, and hopefully we'll all learn a lot about NeutralSwap. Seems to be a promising project, DeFi project in the EOS EVM space. So let me share real quickly a tweet to that promotion. So that's tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. 9 a.m. Eastern. All right, and next up, also just a quick recap of the webinar. Zaisan posted a tweet kind of just highlighting, sharing a highlight of the webinar, and of course, sharing the link to the full webinar. So if you want to watch it, you want to convert that 2 into a 1, there's your link for you to get there. All right, another project that's been making some noise recently in the EOS EVM space called EVM Namespace. So they're promoting a logo competition this week. You can win a bit of some USDT if you get in there and submit some votes. And just in general, encourage you guys to check out that team. I invited them to join us on the Fireside to talk about their project. They are based in Asia, though, so the timing is kind of hard. So I'm still kind of working with them to see how we can somehow get them on the Fireside so that they can introduce themselves and share more about their project. But for now, check out their Twitter, check out this tweet, join the logo contest, maybe earn yourself some USDT. All right, so that's gonna wrap it up for the EOS EVM. Before our next topic, let's take a little musical break. All right, enough of that. Pomelo Season 6 is live. Donations are open. Applications still open for submission if you haven't applied yet. And so for today, I'd like to invite Andrew, product owner of Pomelo, to talk a bit about how the season's going so far.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Welcome. How's it going for Pomelo Season 6 so far?
It's going great. I'm very excited about the multi-pool features that we've got. And in addition, we got IBC going. So that's pretty cool. Exciting for me, for sure. I've got Talos and Eos, so it gives me an opportunity to sort of spread the wealth, if you will. Let me get the season season statistics here.
While you look that up, I just want to jump in here, talk a bit about the Pomelo Telegram channel. So everyone who's in there will have noticed we've got topics now. I've been kind of being a bit more active in the moderation. We're trying to encourage nice, healthy conversation. So if you're just posting a single link to a tweet or a single link to a grant, I'm probably going to go in there, delete that, send you a message, ask you to share a bit more context when you're posting in the Pomelo Telegram channel so that we have, you know, nice, juicy content in there for everyone to see with, you know, less lower quality content, I guess. So everyone's been very responsive. When I message them, people usually get in there, write more information. And I think it's made for a more pleasant Telegram Pomelo experience. And so obviously always looking for feedback from you guys. Do you like this? Do you don't? Is there something that annoys you about how we're running those Telegram channels? Definitely let me know. All right, Andrew, you got some stats for us?
Yeah. So one thing I'll mention on that item is that let me just share the stats here. I got the stats. As yet, we have nearly 100 grants that have been approved, 95 so far. And I will say that there's a few more on the back burner here. I'm not sure if your hot sauce grant has been approved yet. That one's still in pending. So that number will be increased probably later today.
I was hoping you wouldn't call me out for being late with my application for hot sauce. Things got kind of out of hand for me last week. I always stress, you know, make sure your application is in there for the first day of donations. And then I dropped the ball and didn't even get mine in there. But yeah, I sent it earlier on in the week and patiently waiting for it to get approved. Good to hear it will be potentially approved later today.
Yeah, I looked it over and it looks good. So that, as well as there's some other ones in the pipeline, just just waiting. we've got a total matching pool of $182,000, and that's changes. It's interesting because the EOS pools are denoted in US dollars, whereas the Talos Pool is basically in Talos. So the number changes somewhat, but ballpark, 182,000 in matching funds. We've already got nearly 5,000 EOS raised. Only 100 Talos, though, so I will definitely be donating some of my Talos and highly encourage those in the Talos community, even though this is the EOS Fireside Chat, to feel free to donate. There's all sorts of good good initiatives there. Oh, hey, I am in the Pomelo Watch Telegram, and it looks like the Grant Hot Sauce just successfully joined round 603, so congratulations. And one thing I'll add is that the Talos donations are not only for the Talos pool. You can use Talos donations, depending on if the grant owner is accepting them, for any number of grants, no matter which category it's in.
Yeah, I noticed that I had to choose to accept Talos for the hot sauce. Are people refusing donations? Has that even happened? Maybe.
I saw a few grants that were accepting EOS and not Talos. Maybe I'll look.
Pure sure EOS maxis. Pure EOS maxis. Nice.
Yeah, I guess so. I think that's
exactly. So if you're a grant owner out there, maybe go check. I don't know if that's still editable after you submit.
It should be.
But yeah, and I think actually that's another point that's good to bring up is that you are able to go in and edit your grant. So if there's new information you need to add, or you want to continue working on, you know, adding more information, whatever it is, you know, that's a possibility to do.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Any other stats for us, or is that kind of the roundup?
There's some other stats here. Average donations around $5. Median donation is 72 cents. So I don't know if anyone's a statistician out here, but that would seem to indicate there are some big donations out there.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of one EOS donations, which is the minimum, which is what a lot of people donate, which makes a lot of sense. And a couple whales out there splashing around.
Yeah, it's great to see.
All right. Well, thanks, Andrew, for that season 6 update. Before we move on, I want to remind everyone, Pomelo Pitch Session season is in full swing as well. I will share the sign-up form if you want to join the Pitch Sessions on Twitter Spaces, in the Chinese and Korean communities. You can do that in this form. You can also indicate your interest to join the Fireside Rapid Fire Pitch Session that's going on next week. However, anyone with an approved grant can just show up to the Fireside next week and you'll get your 30 seconds to do your pitch to the community. Last time we did this was actually a lot of fun. People kept their pitch short and sweet, and we got through a ton of grant owners, and sharing with the community was really great. So I'm looking forward to doing it again next week, and I hope many of you guys join us. All right. That's going to wrap it up for Pomelo. Let's take another small musical break. All right, still looking for Eve in the chat. He's not with us yet, so let's keep going. Next up, our third special guest of the day. I'd like to invite Lenny, one of our chief delegates for Eden, for this Eden time period. That's not the correct word, but anyways, Eden has recently partnered with Haifa. There was a Bywire article published on the topic this week. I'm going to share that link with you all in the chat, and we'll welcome Lenny to the Fireside.
And Lenny is hoping that you hear me loud and clear. Third time's a charm, Lenny. Welcome to the fireside.
Good one. Discord is not always my friend, unfortunately. But anyway, I'm here. Nice to be here, vocally as well. Yeah, BioWire article was a great one. And it was a bit of a resume, I would say, over a couple of meetings last week. We had an Eden on the US. But working with HiFi is actually, I must admit, a bit old news. Because already since ENF gave a sizable grant to HiFi back in September last year, we, of course, have been kind of on top of it. And we had a number of sessions and even set up mock HiFi items to get familiar with it. So we had a small active group of members in Eden on EOS working and feeding in information how things work in Eden on EOS and for them to implement that kind of a processes into HiFi. So there was quite a bit of activity and working together there in that sense. And towards the end of 22, the HiFi team was, of course, working hard, etc., etc. And as some of us or many of us have noticed, they actually now are getting ready to come out with a beta on EOS. And that's what we've been waiting for. And as soon as we heard that news in Eden on EOS, we kind of, again, reactivated our meetups and discussions with them to ensure that it works well for Eden on EOS, because our rather unique election process, the upvote process, is not an easy thing to replicate. And so anyway, that's one of the meetings last week was actually with developers within the Eden on EOS and HiFi, mainly going through technicals and the like. And I mean, we know the structure, the platform itself is a very great tool. And now coming to EOS is the great opportunity, thanks to ENF for that funding, because that's really making a difference. I myself personally actually kept an eye on that the last handful of years in different ways, so it came very nicely in. The dev meeting we had with HiFi, we actually highlighted a few items, because like I said, upload process is quite tricky to get into their system. So at the moment, as far as we know at this stage, and the devs in HiFi are still working, they're working full out another couple of weeks, I guess, or even more, before the launch in July of a beta. And we're looking at if they cannot, so to say, at that time, have the upvote process so that it could function in sync with our own tools and similar, then how could it possibly be imported, the results and similar, to actually be reflected in the HiFi, on the HiFi platform with all the badges and all the different systems they have over there? So it's still work in progress. Our devs, a few of them, and I don't want to mention names, but particularly I must say Luca is the one who's been pitching in quite a bit in this. And he's also the one who him and his team with the upvote bot, which have proven very well in the last election and compared to a lot of issues with Zoom. And therefore, upvote bot will be an important part in the coming elections, which is only some 3-4 weeks ahead. But what is happening is we're looking to see if we can feed the results from our own tools into the HiFi platform and make use of all the other great tools they have on the platform. So we have actually, from the meeting we had Friday last week, lists have been provided to the devs of HiFi to take a look at it. And we don't really know yet how it's going to pan out. We're waiting on words back and forth a bit and see to what stage, because the structure we've been trying to do during term six inside Eden on EOS is what we call working groups in different areas. And it's kind of not with HiFi in mind, but it's a natural way of actually getting work done. And we're trying to build on soon 2 years of Eden on EOS efforts But it's been a bit scattered, and every term, some other priorities come up. So what we are trying to do this term, the current CDs, is to kind of bring things together, bring the different tools together, bring the different dev teams together, and make what we have done so far, build on it, and make it work for Eden on EOS. We got some great tools. We got the human resource, and we got a number of different positives. But it needs to be synchronized and developed further, and Haifa could very well be the one we're going to work with. And when, hard to say, because the upload process might be a bit by bit, even when beta is released. It might mainly be a working tool initially for us, but it's a bit too early to say that. So that's just a little bit recap what is going on, and what was said in general in this Bywire article, that was actually also mainly a resume from our weekly meeting we have in Eden on EOS, mainly for all the delegates, but open for all members, where we kind of open the lid, not full up, but more or less open the lid on our vision ahead, how we're going to get Eden into, you know, being a productive value for EOS community, etc. So, yeah, the excitement one can read in the article, it's indeed here with us, and we're just going to see how we can foster it into and make sure that it also goes through term by term by term, even if we have changing maybe leaderships every 3 months. It's a matter of getting community buy-in, basically, and that's what the coming week will be very much about, because Sunday 18th, we are supposed to, so to say, show in writing, basically, what our ideas are based on also a number of workshops, strategy, and many others. So it's a lot of things happening in Eden on EOS, and possibly will start be noticed to a higher degree from starting from coming week or even end of this week. So that's what it's all about. And Hi-Fi is an integral part there. We're hoping that it's going to work out well. And so far, so good. Very responsive. And we look forward to work close with them so that we might have an opportunity to really utilize already maybe in July, August, in one way or other, even if not 100% or similar at this stage. Thanks. That's about it. Update. And any questions, feel free.
All right, thank you very much, Lenny, for that update. Quick reminder to everyone. Oh, questions?
Stefan?
Crypto? Yes?
Yeah, Pat Novajoy here, Patrick. So just to complete Lenny, just what Lenny mentioned about Haifa, great news, yeah. And to complete, we have a video coming that will be recorded on this Saturday with Lenny and Mo. Second interview about the CDs, because now he's approaching the end of the term. So that will be an interview very straight to the point, crystal clear with what they have done during this term, what are the achievements, where are we going with Eden on EOS. So to be very clear, and also into the same vein as the article of Michael O'Sullivan, shout out to him, for this nice article, totally on the point. So followed by this interview of Saturday, and that will be published very short, straight forward on the Sunday already into the Nova Crypto YouTube. And I will also publish into this Discord that will be public. That's the second interview of Lenny and Mo. Shout out to them. And great moves with Eden on EOS. Thank you.
Yeah, baby, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, Lenny. Next Eden election coming up in about 2.5 weeks, just over 3 weeks, July 8th. There's currently 33 people signed up, 4 hours in advance. So now's a good time to get out there and sign up for the election if you plan on participating on Saturday, July. All right. Let's see what we got next on the agenda. Oh, the house. Welcome to the fireside, Eve.
Welcome.
All right. 22 million EOS was transferred from the EOS Network Ventures account today. What's going on? I found out about this minutes before the fireside went live. Please tell me what's going on.
Well, we announced a while back that the Fund 1 had been created. So that's the basically ENV Fund 1, the $20 million. At the time of creation of the ENV account, 22.7 and change million EOS had been transferred. That was valued at $20 million at the time. That's currently worth roughly $15 million with the last, with the movement over the weekend on Friday night. Now, the signal of the tokens moving, and they have moved from the ENV account onto a Kraken account that is a corporate account for the ENV, is a signal that we are completing investments. And so there are investments that will be made known over the coming weeks. The investments at current stage total, give or take $5.4 million of the current earmarked ones. And so you're the first ones to hear it right now, live. This is the first time. The details of those investments will be made known over the coming weeks. Those tokens now have been moved in order to start preparing for those investments, subscription documents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Some of you may be listening in right now, know what those investments are because you're a part of those investments. But others, I guess you'll find out when that becomes known. But essentially, that is a Fund 1 that is moving. Now, some people ask, for example, why are you, and this is a common question as well with the ENF. Why are all tokens sent to an exchange? And there's a very simple answer. You might not like it. But the more that we, and every time that we make token transfers, obviously it generates questions just like this right now. And the more that the transactions occur, then the more token holders could make investment decisions based on those transfers. So imagine if, for example, let me simplify to illustrate the point, that if every time we made a token transfer, it then followed up with an investment the following week or in a month from now or whatever it is, you would now make investment decisions based on IC token movements. Therefore, there must be an investment coming in. So I'm either going to long EOS, short EOS, buy EOS, or whatever. And then the argument can be made that you're making investment decisions based on the ENF and or the ENV. And this is what needs to be avoided as much as possible. Obviously, as everybody saw last week with the SEC, enforcement or regulation by enforcement that came down on multiple other chains, that becomes even more important and more crucial to have that separation so that the actions of either entity does not potentially, to the best of our extent, because you can't remove that completely, but does not cause people to make investment decisions based on token movement. And so the token movement is essentially obfuscated through an exchange. Those tokens then land back on chain as they do with the ENF. So people ask as well, for example, does that mean that every time the tokens are there, that the tokens are being sold? No, not at all. And that's the whole point, is if you knew that every time the tokens were being sold, then you could go in short or you can go in long or whatever it is, that's the whole point, is that people don't see kind of the follow-up. But there are obviously accountability mechanisms and such built in through those organizations to ensure that the mandate and the spend of those is still abided by. And obviously, for example, when ENF's case, because we're incorporated in Canada, then there's very strict regulations and very strict auditing requirements, etc. Same thing with the ENV. Actually, there's very strict auditing. It's a full audit every year as well that is required. And so although you might not see it, which is the point, that's the whole point, there are people that see it and that make sure that it has to abide by. And then in both cases, for example, in the ENF's case, there's the board. And in the ENV's case, there's also the 4 out of 7, or I guess the 7. So they're obviously made aware, leading up to this. And so the level of awareness and the level of information is increasingly more as you go up the chain, less as you go down the chain type of thing, if that makes sense. But yes, this is obviously a very positive signal because investments are complete, essentially. They're to the point where now the tokens can transfer because they are needing to be transferred.
All right. So you're not just market selling everything. Good stuff.
And we can't. So that's the other thing, is when people say like your market, we can't. We're not allowed to do that. As a non-for-profit anyways, we can't sell more than what we need. So there's one. The other thing is the mandate is very clear. It needs to be to the benefit of EOS. So you would not be able to, even if you wanted to, sell if it was to the detriment of EOS. There's a lot of questions about DWF and such, which we've already answered, but I can answer again. Does the DWF have EOS tokens? Yes. Yes, they do. Do they have the complete set of EOS tokens that are earmarked for them through an agreement? No, the answer is no. So there's still some there. The advantage with DWF, and you know, we mentioned this, a large part of the strategic partnership with them is token sale. The advantage with DWF is, as a market maker, for every EOS that we sell to them, they pair up with USDT or USDC to add liquidity. So it actually doubles everything we give them, essentially ends up doubling. There's also the advantage that with an OTC buyer, because we can KYC, KYB, and AML them, there are legal advantages there as well. Versus, for example, historically, if we were to sell on the open market on an exchange, there would be two things out of that that this essentially helps with or solves. One is the downward pressure. Obviously, if you're selling through OTC, there's no downward pressure. There's no potential upside either. But in this case, because it's for market making services, you actually double down the amount that is paired with it. So that's very positive. And the other side, as I just mentioned, you know who the buyer is. So when you're through a foundation or through any business in crypto right now on blockchains, but from the securities point of view, the issue of it becoming a security and the determination of that often lies around when you sell the token. It's not when you buy it, it's when you sell the token. And so the more that we can control how we sell and who we sell to, and the more that can be essentially obfuscated away from the general public, the better it is. We actually explored very early on with the ENF. We wanted to do something like every time that there's token movement price, we let people know in advance. And we essentially tell you exactly at what rate, for example, we sold on what day, blah, 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 blah. And we couldn't do that. This is something we wanted to do, but we couldn't. We were very, very highly advised against doing that. And you see that again last week with the SEC. Some of the people that have been nailed down for those very reasons. And so this is a very fine line. Obviously, we don't, you know, everybody's in a way blind at this, which is the big elephant in the room. That's what's very difficult, is there are no clear regulations around this. And the SEC has taken the approach of regulations by enforcement instead of creating the guidelines and the policies. So just as, you know, with everybody else, we're doing the best we can to ensure that we don't go in a direction that could be negative to the token holders with what we know in the context of everything else we're seeing around us. And clearly EOS so far, and there are other things that'll be coming out in the next few weeks, EOS so far has been doing a really good job at ensuring that we stay on this side of the line.
Absolutely, very important to stay on the right side of that vague, imaginary moving line, which hopefully becomes clearer in the coming months and years. We got a couple questions in the chat, Eve. Waller might as well run them by you. Some are even off topic from what we're talking about. Eagle asks a question, which I'm sure he's not the only EOS holder to ask, is basically relating token price. Of course, it dropped in the last week or two. And he's wondering, from an operational cost standpoint, how are block producers, and is
the EOS network concern that, you know, the token price could become so low that operation of the network would stop. I can answer a part of it in terms of block producers. I can't talk for all block producers, but on our side, our block producer income is not the majority of our income. So it used to be a much bigger percentage. Used to be our only income. That was some crazy days of handling price swings and having no salaries. But and I'm sure this is the case for many other block producers. EOS block production is not the only source of income they have. And so I'm not particularly worried from a block producer perspective about this low token price. In terms of other factors for EOS network development, I don't know, Eve, if you have got anything to share on that side of things.
I think generally every single team, whether they be block producers, whether they be dApp developers, whether they be foundations, other chains, with the token price movement in the last 2 weeks or so, where the general market has been clobbered throughout by roughly 35-40%, are likely having very difficult discussions right now, including us, obviously, right? So we're in a different position than other foundations because we don't sit on a treasury. And so obviously, other foundations that launched with treasuries, I can't imagine how difficult that must be for them. It must be very, very hard because they see their treasuries go down. It's just very different than in our case. In our case, we've got an inflationary mechanism, but that is a static inflationary mechanism. So obviously, the amount of tokens that are output are the same. The value of those tokens output are is obviously lower right now at this stage. But what that did for the ENF, for example, is that the way that we budget, so I can't talk for the BPs or the others, but the way that we budget anyways is very conservative for multiple reasons. One, because we're a non-for-profit, we can't hold the treasury, for example. So we can't, even if we wanted to, when the price is high, sell and then just hold and then whatever it is. Or we can't speculate, we can't buy and sell in order to, you know, or make investments, that type of thing. We just can't. It's outside of the mandate. We just can't do it. And so we've had to, from the very beginning, budget very, very conservatively. And so we budget much, much, much lower than what the actual token price is. Having said that, obviously, this is a huge drop. So we are constantly looking at our budget and what we need to do and kind of the output and the initiatives in the community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we are, you know, we have to do this continuously. Obviously, with this drop, we're doing this again. But the good thing in a way is that because EOS has historically always been void of finances, essentially of capital, we learned to very early on, kind of as a function or as a skill set, to be very frugal and to manage a budget accordingly. We never benefited from good days. We never benefited from excess. And so that, I believe, is actually a huge advantage for EOS versus others.
All right, thank you. A couple quick hitters here. Is this token transfer related to the DWF Labs investment?
No, as I mentioned before, the announcement and strategic partnership with DWF is entirely separate of the ENV. Having said that, though, when the ENV is making investments, there's nothing that is preventing it from also engaging with DWF and doing, for example, an OTC transfer for them, which then again comes again and brings about the same advantages from the ENF side of things. And I can share that, yes, we are also working with DWF on the ENV side of things for the very same reasons. But the announcement that was made previously has nothing to do with the ENV. So anything that's done on the ENV side of things with DWF is outside of that and ultimately, essentially, more advantage, even, you know, further advantages.
All right. I know you've mentioned this on previous Fireside, but Chris Barnes asked, is the EOS Network Ventures independent from the EOS Network Foundation?
Yes, correct. They're completely separate entities.
All right. And what else?
Just to follow on that, if you don't mind. So if they're separate, how come you're speaking for them, Eve? Isn't there, shouldn't there be someone else who's independent of the ENF, which you are clearly pivotal of? Who's the independent person who's speaking on behalf of the ENV now?
The two entities are completely separate. If you'd like somebody else to speak on behalf of the ENF, the ENV, we would have to be in a different time zone and in a different language.
It just doesn't seem to fit. If it's independent, clearly you're not. So and it just seems like a strange statement to say it's independent. It seems like they're highly intertwined. But the other question I had, maybe you can speak to it since I'm on. You mentioned quite, almost a year ago, there was an audit coming for 2022, I believe. Any chance on getting your hands on that before the year's up?
Yeah, so the audit firm that we used last year and that we use for general audits is Grant Thornton, or Raymond Chabot Grant Thornton. When the FTX fiasco occurred earlier this year, essentially all of the auditing companies were given a memo to discourage doing auditing on crypto companies. And so we lost RCGT as an auditor. We have been working since with a different auditor. So the idea was to have the audit in Q1. We had to do a complete reset with a different auditor. And that auditor is going through the steps right now. It does take long because it's a full complete audit. But yes, we were set back because of FTX. As far as we could tell, so the large auditing companies, the big four, no longer do any work with crypto-related companies in Canada, more specifically, because of the FTX and the uncertainty. So when you do an audit, they essentially stamp and they give a stamp of here you go. We are validating that these numbers match the reality. And because the industry, as we saw with FTX, is a lot convoluted in some ways, and the expertise required to understand it is somewhat high, they just don't, justify, and they were told not to justify to do work with them. So we've lost RCGT. So yes, the audit is still underway. It is a full audit. So for those who don't know, there are three different levels of audit. And the one that we are getting done is a full audit, which means they look at every single transaction. And so typically a full audit in a regular company has nothing to do with crypto. In a regular company, typically it takes about 3 months or so if it's your first time as a business. In our case, the projected timeline was roughly 4 months because it's crypto and it's our first time. And so that delayed by roughly 4 to 5 months, basically. So yes, we are still getting an audit, but no, it is not with RCGT. It's with another company that is a little bit more risk averse. And I guess for the question of money back, you don't pay. And so there was no money lost for that. That's not how it works.
All right, Perry asks a question, or maybe more makes a comment. He's saying that the obfuscation of the transfer created by sending the tokens to an exchange before a public announcement creates moral hazard for a few individuals aware of the impending investment versus making the transactions public after the public announcement of the ENV investment. I can answer from my perspective. Knowing that there are transfers being done from EOS Network Foundation accounts to various other accounts, that doesn't mean it's an investment, doesn't mean it's a sell. The range of reasons why a transfer can happen is wide and balanced, meaning that this information cannot give an advantage to any network participant that sees it. So to me, it makes sense why the strategy is being used. In terms of, a few individuals aware of impending investment, I mean, I don't think there's no way to get around that. Few individuals will have knowledge, and it's up to them to not incriminate themselves and do crimes of insider trading. So that's kind of my take on this comment. Perry and Chris Martins asked, what jurisdiction is the EOS Network Ventures registered in? It's a good question.
So what you know as the ENV is a combination of different entities. And so there is a GP fund, there is a management company, and there is an LP agreement. The foundation is a Caymans foundation. The GP is a Caymans entity. The management company is a Canadian company. And the LP agreement was not an entity. It's a limited partnership between the foundation and the GP. So ENV is four different parts.
Can you name the management company that's in Canada? And Nova Crypto Helios is out of Caymans, but it has nothing to do with public funds from EOS, but I'm glad you've asked. I'm just curious about the management company in Canada so I can do some research.
I will not be giving that name.
You won't? Oh, okay. So it's not that. Oh, that's interesting. Why won't you give the name? Particular reason why token holders can't know who's managing these funds?
There is a jurisdiction named the AS jurisdiction, and there is an AS wallet in building.
There you go, Patrick, coming in clutch. I guess, yeah, I guess that's all we'll get. Okay. Let's see here. What else did we have on the agenda? I think we covered most of it. Eve, if you're still here, did you want to maybe briefly talk about the Real Vision interview you did earlier this week? How did that go? Anything interesting to highlight from there?
I mean, I was reading the chats in the channels afterwards, and people are saying, you know, you could have taken the direction or the discussion a different way. It's important to note that when something like Real Vision comes out and they want to do an interview, they have an agenda, right? They've got an audience, and their audience in this case is not our audience. It's a, you know, there's very little overlap. Their audience is you know, I'm sure there are some overlaps, but in general, it's a very different overlap. And so put yourself in their shoes. The subject and the interview may have been very boring for you because you knew all of this stuff, but for them, it was all new. So for example, there's a question that came about the $4 billion, and they thought that the EOS community got the $4 billion, for example. So the level of education is at a very different starting point than what I would imagine the people in this very specific fireside are. And why that's really, I guess, important, why that's, I think, ultimately was a really good interview, is them simply wanting to reach out and learn about EOS and hear about where we are. And obviously we were there before the interview and after the interview, we stayed on and such, is quite positive. It's again, in a very, I think, prominent channel that's got a lot of eyes on it. Now, you know, still indicative of new or old people or new people now learning of EOS and learning it in a format that they enjoy with a, you know, with a host that they trust and such. And so I think it was a really good interview overall. I thought it was kind of funny because Ash and I spoke before and after, and he was saying, oh, these are hard questions, and they really were not very difficult questions at all. But coming as an outsider that hasn't been following EOS and or was interested in EOS a long time ago, lost interest, coming back into it, is really interesting to see his point of view and a bunch of the other questions that they were asking as well and what led to it. So overall, I think very, very positive. And he's a really good interviewer in general. He had done a bunch of preparation, and you can tell, Zach and I talk about this a lot, when we get on podcasts, there are some interviewers that are just really good. They know what they're talking about. They do some research, and they're able to do back and forth. And Ash was able to do that, so it was pretty cool.
All right, good stuff. EOS was also in the news. Some of the 5-year anniversary articles got picked up around the crypto space, so that's great. And I would encourage everyone in the community to make sure to, for example, retweet this tweet from the EOS Network Foundation, highlighting the strengths that the EOS Network has demonstrated over the last 5 years, which is, highlighted in this tweet, which is then highlighted in turn in that blog article. So let's get out there, give some likes, give some retweets to these posts. All right, so that is going to wrap it up on my side for the agenda topics I had for today. At this point, of course, community open mic, off-topic banter, Fed didn't raise the rates, Bitcoin is crashing hardcore right now, standard Wednesday afternoon things. If you guys want to jump on stage, now's the time to do it.
Hey, Seskin here from Challenge Deck. And one thing I wanted to ask was, it sounds like there's been some cooperation between the ENF and an exchange Kraken. And I wonder if it's in the purview of the foundation to look after tokens or see that tokens that run on the EOS blockchain are able to, ride the coattails a little bit and be able to cooperate or have some dialogue with some of these bigger exchanges.
I'm not sure if that was a question for me, but I'm not even sure what the question is. So the cooperation with Kraken is having an account on the exchange. So I wouldn't necessarily call that cooperation. But can you expand a little bit on? I'm not sure I understood what the question is or what you were trying to ask.
Oh yeah,
That was directed at me, I'm assuming it was.
It just in general, if market making, I think I heard of market making. I don't know if I'm driving around right now, but market making and just getting tokens listed for us at Challenge Deck is a big deal for us to get on more exchanges. It could be a potential source of capital. So it was something that you're just even getting a hold of exchanges, getting a hold of the right people and just being able to have a dialogue with them is could be tough sometimes. So if there's any way to cooperate with you guys on that, and if that would be a possibility.
To cooperate,
basically, can the EOS Network Foundation help tokens, EOS-based tokens, get listed on exchanges?
With a very minimal sphere of influence, perhaps. Being very candid and realistic, most likely no. The factors that determine whether or not an exchange lists a token, especially in this current environment, are far greater than anything we have in our control, and ultimately they're in your control as the business itself, because it's essentially dependent on amount of volume and on revenue. And so if you have the volume and the revenue, maybe an introduction, a little push can help, but ultimately if you don't have the volume, the revenue and the other key components, and in this very market incredibly difficult, then no, that we there's not much that we can do to help that would significantly, now you can't, but now you can. No, unfortunately.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse with the Bees. Can you hear me?
Yes, Jesse, welcome to the Fireside.
Hey, so I'm going to put, there we go. I'm putting in the chat. So last week I came on, I teased the new thing that the bees are working on. It's called PodSum, and we use AI to and some human touch to summarize long-form content, specifically video content. And we summarized last week's Fireside for the five-year anniversary. And the other thing that we're doing is that we have the summary on EOS Dean, Nova Crypto Patrick's new project that you can earn tokens for rating and reviewing the summary of the Fireside. And so I encourage everyone to check it out. You have to sign up as a user. But we have so the Fireside last week was 2 hours and 13. Or actually, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it's over 2 hours. And our summary we calculated at a 13-minute read. So, like, the whole point of this is, you know, like, people have secretaries, like old business have secretaries take notes. And this is just a really efficient way to consume information for long-form content. And so if you haven't checked it out, please go do so. Let us know, like, for the feedback, did we miss anything? Like, one of the most important things is getting, you know, 99.9% of all the important details. And so, yeah, check it out. PodSum, EOS Dean, Fireside Summaries. And yeah, really, really interested in getting feedback on this.
Yeah, very cool, Jesse. Thanks for bringing it up. I just realized I forgot to add you to the agenda. You sent me a message a couple of days ago. Forgot to add you there. Apologies for that, but thank you for jumping in. Would it help you or whoever's maybe doing the review to have access to my show notes for these to kind of double check that all the topics were captured?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We also, you know, we also want to do the summary and get feedback. Like, because if we, like, if the AI in our processes missed something that was in your show notes, we'd want to know that. Like, we want to be challenged here. But yes, having the show notes, like, just on our end, if it misses something, yeah, that'd be helpful.
Okay, cool. I'll send you a message. And
Stefan,
those links.
Stefan,
Patrick,
I just want to mention that with what just did PodSum with Jesse, we are collaborating. So Jesse sent me the summary that he has made of the Fireside Chat. Then I give this summary to Pictory.ai, and Pictory.ai generated the MP3. Of the last Fireside Chat last week, and in 13 minutes, 15 minutes. So there is also the MP3. So there is the to listen, there is to read, and there is the Fireside Chat itself. So we will do that again. That was a premiere, and we will continue to do that together, Jesse. With Jesse, I will continue to do that, to do so. So not only for the EOS Fireside Chat, but for other educational content that is maybe 2 hours or 1 hour, and that we want to reduce to some minutes. So that's the goal. And shout out Jesse with PodSum. As he mentioned, he is on EOS Dean as a solution. And I encourage everyone to go to join EOS Dean and find the solution PodSum. And learn about the solution, then do a nice rating, a genuine rating, and also a genuine review, because we want to attract more affiliate and also users on EOS Dean. And PodSum is addressing the B2C, so business to consumer. So that makes totally sense to attract users on a platform. And we need also affiliate, but first, users, because every platform needs users. Everyone knows that, and That's very important, like Hidden Onios, like Haifa, like EOSDIN, like Hidden Fractal. I mentioned here Hidden Fractal. We need more users. That's why we are collaborating with Alien Vault Fractal. So that's important that the platform are collaborating between them. Like this, we will see more people joining. And on all Antelope chains, there is not only EOS, there is also Telos, there is also UX, there is also WAX. So we don't hate any blockchain. We are all friends, and we have to make a better collaboration. So that's what we want to do with the bees, because we want to inject the best nectar into the mindset of the people, and the best nectar into the mindset of the people, that's EOS and all the other blockchain. That's the message. So no fight, no hard feeling. We are in a bad situation with the market currently. So that's not the time to fight. That's just the time to join the force. And I want to be very loud and clear here. I am very happy with what is doing ENF, what is doing ENV in mainland China, Hong Kong and all. There was an interview with Beatrice of ENF some weeks ago with the Antilopsis workshop number 20. There will be other video with Beatrice, because we want to cover what is happening in China, what is happening in Hong Kong. So that's very important, because the market is totally silly, but at least there are some people in other jurisdictions that are very open, like Liechtenstein, Switzerland, China are part. So that's a nice move to go there, and shout out to Yves for all the work that he's doing. Because we can say what we want, he's the big beard samurai, with all my heart, soul, and mind. And I don't say that because it's ENF. I say that because it's about the man that is doing all what he can since the beginning of ENF, and to give a better sentiment for EOS. So that's a big shout out here from me, at least. I don't know for you, but for the people that are believing what I say, make some thumbs up into the chat, or put the number one if you believe in what is doing ENF, what is doing Eve, what is doing Lovejoy, what is doing Daniel Keys, what is doing Chris Barnes also, because there is no competition here, okay? So, and your support, I forget a lot of people here, okay? So be happy. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby, yeah.
Voila! And we have a nice beard by Daniel Keys Joy that he has just published now.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Patrick, for those positive comments. All right, anyone else want to jump on here? Share something for the community? If not, we're going to wrap it up in just a bit.
Just to mention one more thing, with these summaries, one of the main problems, in my opinion, with video content, especially podcasts and YouTube videos in general, is that there's a big lack of references. So you reference something, there's often no links to research more or to learn more about it. There's been many times, me personally, when I listen to a podcast or, you know, the fireside or whatever, and it's like, oh, what was that thing? I have to go and like try to find like in the middle of, you know, the video where it was. So that's like one of the things we're bringing to the table here. And then the other one is when you go to the summary, you'll see all these images. We're using Midjourney to, we have a prompt from ChatGPT to put, to create a prompt for Midjourney to create relevant images based on the text of the summary. So hopefully this makes, because, you know, you're going from video content or audio content to written text, and that platform shift could not work for some people, but getting images and relevant pictures in there should, or hopefully will make the experience better. So yeah, a couple features I forgot to mention, and yeah, again, please go check it out, and we'll hopefully we'll do this for kind of every, you know, all the big firesides, all the big events. And so, you know, if you miss it and you're too busy, you know, firesides usually over 2 hours, we'll be there.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Jesse. And I will definitely be checking that out. All right, so we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you, everyone, for joining. And let's do it again next week. Until then, let's go EOS!
Go EOS!
EOS from the blue bar! Yeah! And click the link about Potsum. Here in the chat, you have a...